Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Black Law and Legal Lies, where we specialize in the legal lies. My name is Dan. Keep up with me on Twitter, IG, at I Am Dan on Drugs. Keep up with the show on Twitter, IG, YouTube, everywhere at Black Law Podcast.
So, like, I specialize in telling the truth. My name's Jess Dan. You can keep up with me on Twitter at I Tell Legal Lies. Because it's legal for me to tell the legal lies. You
man,
know, I have
crooked.
I have a degree and I'm licensed.
Man, I feel crooked as shit. I don't know what's going on.
You are crooked. You are extremely crooked. Been crooked since the day I met you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, before we have a conversation with a guest to get his take on racism geographically, it's come to my attention that we got a lot of
hate mail.
Unsavory comments from some unsavory people. So I guess what I want to ask today is, why do white people think that they can and must comment on look at that hand, son, comment on black issues? So if you look at some of our video clips that we posted from last episode, where we were talking about Ahmaud Arbery, citizens arrest, and things of that nature, it upset a lot of white people, but why? Why do white people feel the need to jump into a conversation, and it's in an attacking fashion? It wasn't even in a dialogue. Why do you think that is? Why does race make them so uncomfortable?
I don't think that that's a white thing, actually, because black people tend to comment on any and everything that we feel comfortable commenting on, whether we have knowledge or not. We tend to say what we want to say when we want to say it. So I don't think it's a white thing. I mean, we tend to, I think it's a human thing. Humans want to get their point across, even if they really have no point.
Okay.
I see that you have pants on too.
I do. So one of the comments last week, one of the public comments, was when you were explaining citizens' arrest and what the inception of it was from being retail, I think.
Right.
So my question, or it was more of a statement slash question, was, well, your question was, do you know why citizens' arrest was put on the books? And I said, probably for runaway slaves.
Right.
Now that, and then I said probably if I had to guess. So according to white people, that was race baiting. that was race baiting. So one, I'm gonna say that I think that was a legitimate response for somebody who doesn't know where it came from.
Well, no, I mean, it would be a legitimate response, period, in a lot of circumstances, because whether Caucasian brothers and sisters want to acknowledge or not, a lot of the laws that are on the books in most states were actually put there as a result of either slavery or Jim Crow. So a lot of these laws revolved around suppression of black people.
There's this article on by Dr. Robin DiAngelo that I was reading, and
you're doing research now. I remember once upon a time somebody said they don't do research.
I always do research. So here's some of the reasons, and it's a dope article. I'm gonna link to it in the show notes. The following examples of things that trigger racial stress for white people are: suggesting that a white person's viewpoint comes from a racialized frame of reference, challenging their objectivity. People of color talking directly about their own racial perspectives. That challenges the white taboos on talking openly about race. Mm-hmm. People of color choosing not to protect the racial feelings of white people in regards to race. That's a challenge to white racial expectations and the need, entitlement to racial comfort. people of color not being willing to tell their stories or answer questions about their racial experiences, that challenges the expectation that people of color will serve white people. A fellow white person not providing agreement with one's racial perspective, that's a challenge to white solidarity. Receiving feedback that one's behavior had a racist impact, that's a challenge to white racial innocence. Suggesting that a group member is significant, a group membership is significant, that's a challenge to individualism. So the individualism I thought was pretty interesting, because what they say is a white people don't see themselves as a collective. They don't see themselves as a group. They see themselves as individual.
An individual. Individual, so they can
right. I so they can separate themselves from the group.
I make my own decisions. I think for myself. I'm not a part of this group of white suppressors. Is that what it is? I don't want to be lumped into, I don't want to be lumped into a group yet. That's what they do at all times. They lump black people into groups, but they want to be individuals.
Yeah, pretty much. So they're able to distance themselves and say, well, I'm not a racist. I'm, you know, what those guys do, they're individuals. But yet when they look at us, we're a collective. Black people are a collective. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, what one is done, they all have done. It's a them thing. It's not a they thing, right? Or a he or a she thing. It's a black thing. Mm-hmm. That's about right.
So, had to get that off my chest with these motherfucking white people jumping out there sending us hate mail. Why the fuck am I crooked?
Dude, you are not crooked.
No, I'm on another camera, son. I'm looking at the camera over yonder.
I don't care what camera you looking at, dude. You're not crooked.
Man, I got a bobblehead.
Like, stay off the drugs, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by none other than director, videographer, photographer, part-time scientist on the side, Craig from Next Level Visions. Full disclaimer, Craig is my cousin. So if we gang up on Ann, you know.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be.
But you know what's funny? It's funny that it's always me against the world. It's always been that way. I have no problem with that.
That should tell you something about yourself.
I mean, it's like you and P from Charlotte against me. It's everybody against me. I don't care. Hold my own.
Not us. It's you. So, Craig, at the top of the show, what we were talking about is racism as a whole. Our last episode pissed a lot of white people off for some reason, and we really didn't expect it to. We were talking about the Maude Arbery case and citizens arrest, and the citizens arrest is what pissed a lot of people off, because one of my comments was when Ann asked if I knew why citizens arrest was. Yeah, I said, right. For runaway slaves. And for someone who doesn't know, I would say that's a educated guess. That's a good guess. And apparently it was for retail, but that pissed a lot of white people off. And it was race baiting and all kinds of stuff. So I'm like, well, we need to explore. We need to explore this a little more. So you're a well-traveled person. You've lived in Germany, overseas, Louisiana. That's probably about as far south as you can go, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, all over the place.
Yeah.
What were your experiences like in each of those places as far as being a black man?
In other countries, you know, a lot of my travel was when I was a little bit younger, you know, my youth or my teens, early 20s. But I've been to Saudi, I've been to Korea, you know, I've been a lot of places. And believe it or not, I had no problems. Like the worst thing that I, you know, would have to deal with from, you know, being in any other country is maybe you might get some looks if you happen to be in an area where, you know, they just don't see a lot of black people. You know, my father was stationed in Germany. We lived in a small town. We didn't live in one of the big German cities. So getting up,
they hadn't going seen,
what's that? Right.
I was just saying they hadn't seen black people.
Right. But I had no problems. I mean, I used to go to the bars and hang out. with the local, you know, the local Germans and drink and have a good time. Every now and then you might have a nice old lady wanting to touch my hair. But you know what I mean? Right. Like, damn, nowadays I probably wouldn't permit that. But when I was young, I was like, yeah, sure. You know,
but you know, you're saying that about touching your hair. That happens today. That still happens. People still want to feel your hair, touch it if they've never had that experience. But you're talking about, you said Saudi Arabia, and my brother's in the military, and he's made the exact same comments. He's like, Iraqis, Afghanis, Saudis, they have no problem with black people, black and brown people, because a lot of them are actually darker than us or our same skin tone.
Right.
So they have no problem with us.
Right. I was surprised to see, and you know, I guess it's my lack of knowledge in my, you know, 20s, to see people as dark as I am. I was like, whoa, wow.
Right.
Like, you know, it's the whole shade of color. You know what I mean? The whole rainbow, pretty much.
Right. Yo, so with that being said, so overseas, it was relatively nothing out of the ordinary, more or less. So let me ask you this. Have you experienced like blatant overt racism to where, you know, yo, this is because I'm black?
Absolutely. I mean, you mean in another country or just have I experienced just
in general?
Yes.
Yeah.
If I, any instance I've ever experienced just flat out was here in America, you know, we're number one.
But you know, you say that, and I don't know if I think as Americans, we have a skewed vision of America because this is where we are primarily. Because I have people who have said to me that they have experienced racial profiling or racism in other countries. I went to Europe about 8 years ago. So 8 years ago, and I was in Paris, and I experienced some racial tension and some not blatant racism, but you know when the situation is racialized. So man,
them niggas was just trying to rob y'all. As far, you talking about the taxi cab?
No, I'm not talking about the taxi cab. Even though that was a racial moment, but it was an experience of two African people, because African American and African from the continent. So there are a lot of African people in France because French is one of their languages. And I had always heard that African people don't really like African American people. They don't like Americanized African people. And
that's true in my experience. Like the DC area has a bunch of them, Ethiopians, Senegalese, a bunch of them. And in my experience, they don't like us.
In my personal experience, I never experienced that until I went there and I saw it.
Wow.
And I heard it, and it was like, well, all right then.
Yo, so Craig, on your side of things, like what are some of the things that you've seen over the years as far as racism?
I'm kind of a big guy, so I've never had anybody just outright, you know, drop the N-word on me or nothing like that. But
right.
I mean, most people I know have been in situations. I can say last summer I was in a situation where, you know, me doing my videography at that time, you know, this time last year, I was dabbling in YouTube. And what I did was take our brand new camera down to the park, sit down, and I was trying to figure out some settings and get the camera balanced on the equipment that I was using. And, you know, about 10 minutes into it, I was sitting at a picnic table. I kind of glanced to my right and I see two cops walking up. I said, oh shit, it's about to be one of those kind of days. And I look to my left, here comes three more. So, okay, we got five cops approaching me. I ain't doing anything but sitting here on this bench. And so, of course, they approach and want to know what I'm doing, why I'm here. Someone had called them and said, you know, that they thought I was taking pictures of children.
in the park.
Oh shit. So and I look around and I can see, I don't know, maybe 100 yards away, there is a playground area, there are swings. I hadn't seen any of that. I was focused on my equipment. It's a big park. So of course they want to ask for ID, and right away my instinct is to no, I haven't done nothing wrong. I'm not giving you my ID.
Right.
But I have the internet. I've seen all the videos. I know how this can go, you know. So
right.
Which makes me even madder, because I haven't done anything. I hand him my ID and he runs his little background check, make sure I don't have any warrants or whatever it is they're checking for. But yeah, man, I mean that one fucked me up for a couple of days, because as a grown man, you never want to feel, like you have no power.
Right.
I've done nothing wrong. I'm minding my business here, upstanding citizen, pay my taxes, all that, serve the country. I just want to be left alone and do what I was doing. But
yeah, we say something on the show, we driving while black, shopping while black, living while black.
Yeah.
Just that's our reality. And the thing, it's funny because Dan was talking about these people who say that we were race baiting, but these are the same people who, for the most part, they pat themselves on the back because they're extremely liberal, mm-hmm. and they have black friends and they're not racist.
Nah, this wasn't them. Trump land.
These are some of the same people, because even mm-hmm. those people who are Trump supporters, they will tell you, I have black friends, so I am not racist. They will say stuff like that. I know some of them, and they say that mess all the time. So, but as I said, these are still some of these people that will not to this day say that racism is alive and well in America.
Right. See, and that's kind of what I wanted, I guess, to get to the bottom of today, which I'm sure we're not. But I still don't understand, like I said at the top of the show, why it makes white people so uncomfortable to have these conversations about race. Because, as we said before, like with the Ahmaud Arbery case, with the Breonna Taylor case, with going back to what's the dude named Sean Bell in New York, like no matter what, they try to find some sort of a justification. Sometimes it's a sick and twisted justification,
right?
But they want to believe that the police officers or the George Zimmermans of the world, like they want to believe that these are the good guys, mm-hmm. and the dead black man is, or woman in the case of Breonna, is the bad guy. And we already know that, going back to even early childhood development, it's like they look at black is bad. I'm sure both of you seen the baby doll experiment. Mm-hmm. Black is bad. White is good. So it's like, when you try to have these conversations with them, they get defensive, they get offended. And it's like, how are you getting offended when you don't have to deal with this shit? So I guess my theory is they get offended because they do have to deal with it, in a sense, right now during this conversation. They have to think about things that they're not comfortable thinking about. That's the best I could come up with.
It goes back to what I said. You do not want to acknowledge that this is still alive and well. You don't want, see, a lot of people, we are the only creatures that have the ability to lie to ourselves. So we lie to ourselves. Like, think about it. Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. And how many times did you hear, America can't be racist, we elected a black man as president? how many times did you hear that?
A lot.
Right. So mm-hmm. we don't want to acknowledge what is inherently wrong in our society. We don't want to acknowledge the bad in ourselves. That if you boil it down to the very bottom, the DNA of it all, that's the thing. We don't want to acknowledge the wrong in us. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to not, for some people, to not deal with it, to not look at it. Anytime you see any of these deaths, it's always, in my opinion, that we have to, it's always, for some reason, looked at as the person who was killed, it's their fault.
right?
You know, when we have to prove otherwise, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's wild to me. I used to have these conversations at work, but it stopped. It got too intense. It just got frustrating because I feel like the only one speaking for millions. You know what I mean?
You can't change their mind. That's the thing. It is so ingrained to sidestep, to believe I'm a good person. I could never do that. Yet you think that way. You know, you think it, but you don't want to acknowledge it. And you can't change their mind because you have to acknowledge that you are different than what you see in the mirror. You know, we all hold a mirror up to ourselves, and what is reflected back at us is not necessarily who we are. It's who we want to be. You know,
I hold a mirror up, I got a six pack, and you know, I got big ass. Exactly.
Who you want to be, not who you are. Right.
Right. So, I can honestly say every racial conversation that I've ever had with somebody that is not black, and this actually spans Latinos. We talked about a conversation last week, mm-hmm. that I had with a Latino friend of mine. They all these conversations go nowhere, and it does get frustrating, and it does it makes you want to, well, me, let me speak for myself. It makes me want to go back to almost like a primitive way of thinking, like, all right, we got to fight now because, mm-hmm. yo, these words ain't working. You ain't getting it. I'm not getting what you're trying to say. And I even give people the benefit of the doubt, like my Latino friend. It's like, I don't think you mean exactly what you're saying. So let's discuss it. Let's elaborate on it. Let's go back and forth. But nah. According to him, Latinos, yo, they're the race in America that's treated the worst. You know, black people have it way better, and whatever. So, yo, it's just, is that your experience too, Craig?
Yeah, I used to have these conversations because it was interesting to me, and it was a way to hear, you know, another person's point of view and get my point of view across. And maybe throughout my lifetime, you know, we can have a better understanding of each other. Since 2016, I don't have these conversations no more.
Right.
Because, you know, during that election and when all that was going on, I've never felt so much tension on my job and even on, you know, online, social, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, than I have before. So I usually avoid these things. You know, I avoid having the conversation, not out of comfort. It's just I feel a lot of time that it's not worth my time. I have to actually find someone who's really, truly, honestly interested in having a dialogue. I'm open to that, but I feel like nowadays everyone feels like they're a victim. You know what I mean? A lot of the white guys I talk to right now, they feel like the country's coming for them. You know, whether it's women's equal pay, whether it's Me Too, whether it's racism. Like, when I talk to these guys, these are the feelings I get. So I've just stopped having the conversations, you know. I mean,
by not having the conversations, do you think that they think that you think like them?
No. Everyone's clear where everybody stands on my job. This is what made me stop. A lot of people that I talk to, and I can't say everyone because I have a lot of white friends, a lot of, you know, coworkers, family, even. A lot of people feel that the more you discuss this, that's the problem. You know, I've heard it plenty of times that when Barack was president, racial tensions was high because he wanted to talk about it all the time. I'm like, that's not how we solve problems. Ignoring it's not how we solve problems. Dan, you're in IT. I'm in IT. If you don't understand why something is broke, you can't begin to fix it.
Right.
So in IT, you don't just randomly unplug cables and start rebooting things. And
you must not know,
understand what's that?
You must not know our IT department.
Well, I don't know how Dan does it.
Man, you must not know.
Unplug it all.
But you know what I mean? Like, you have to understand the reason behind things in order to move forward. That's how I fix problems. I need to understand why it's broken in order to move forward. A lot of people don't want to understand why something is broken And that's where we're stuck.
Right.
I think a lot away. Of, see, you say a lot of people don't want to understand why it's broken. Not that they don't want to, for me, it's not that they don't want to understand why it's broken. They don't think it's broken. Because how many times have we all heard that happened so long ago, y'all need to get over it. Like, it's not relevant now. You know, this is 2020. That is not relevant. Leave it in the past.
That article that I was reading made a real good point, too, about segregation, how in the white suburbs, you have typically you'll have an all white neighborhood. They don't interact outside of that, outside of their community with other races. And to them, their life is great. They got their house, they got their cars, their kids are in good schools. So what am I losing by not interacting with people of other ethnicities?
So, absolutely. In their head, nothing.
Right.
You're nothing.
So you have that aspect of the segregation, just us being apart and being different.
Right. But you're losing perspective. That's what you're losing. You know, you're looking, you lose actually being able to look at life through the eyes of someone else's struggle, you know, through the eyes of someone else's experience. And something else, you know, I said a couple of seconds ago about people saying it's in the past. This is 2020. Leave it in the past. But there is such a thing as still white flight. There is such a thing as white privilege. There is a, I mean, these are all things that are still alive and well in 2020. So, and all of those things stem from past, you know?
Right,
right.
I want to say something to what you said, Dan, about people not leaving their neighborhoods. You know, basically, we self-segregate as people. I mean, it's just a natural thing. You tend to be around people like you or that are into things, you know, subjects and things that you like. I can say this, the least amount of racism I've ever dealt with is when I was in the military or a military brat overseas, because everybody is almost forced to mix. You have people from all over America, all over the world, various cultures, all living together and working together. And if you don't surround yourself with you know, a variety of people, you can't help but have one skewed view
right.
of the world. You know, I mean, if you want to make any progress, get yourself around some other people. You'll learn a lot. I learned a lot.
No doubt. I learned by being around Anne that I really dislike Anne. But yo, so check this. Being a father too, and having your prior experience being traveled and being in the military, being all over the place, did that give you a perspective that you could, I guess, pass on to your kids, especially as black boys, that they might not have been able to get from anywhere else or say a unique perspective?
Maybe. I mean, for my kids, where we live, it's a small town. So if in my head, you know, prior to having kids, I would have thought I could pass on the ability to be around different types of people. They're almost forced to here. You know what I mean?
Right.
You have people from all different walks of life. So I feel my kids are very well-rounded and they understand a lot more than I did at their age when it comes to, especially when it comes to race or police officers and things like that, because I still, and this is one of the worst things I said, I still remember being an 18-year-old telling my mother, like, hey, that racism shit, that's gone. That's the old days. My mom thought it was the dumbest thing, and it really was the dumbest thing I ever said to her. But little did I know, you know what I mean, that it hadn't gone anywhere. Just in my little world, living in a little town in Germany, I thought
you
it was over.
You weren't experiencing it. So right. Let me ask you a question, because I'm honest enough to, I want to put this question to the group, and everybody can yes or no it or delve into it. Do you think that you're racist?
Fuck yeah, I am.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
No, that was it. Fuck
that
it.
Was it. I think everyone has a little prejudice, a little, maybe a little bigotry in them. You know, like I said, it's natural that we self-segregate, but racist, I don't think I am at all. Like, I don't, nah.
I'll give someone a chance. Let me say that. I'll give someone a chance. Sure, we know all the racial stereotypes. Some of them true, some of them not. Some of them funny, some of them not. But I'll give people a chance. I'll give anyone a chance. Throughout my life, I've had a lot of Hispanic friends, a Salvadorian, a Cuban, Guatemalan, like just different Latinos. I've had a handful of white friends, but that didn't happen until I actually got older and kind of got out of my neighborhood. Most of my friends were Latino and Black growing up, though, and I had no problem with any of their ethnicities. Now, I might have had problems with them as individuals, but that's after taking the time to get to know them.
Right.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm honest enough with myself, and I 100% agree with what Craig said. I tell people all the time that I am prejudiced. I am, because all prejudice is basically
prejudge us.
Like, you know, it's like a choice to interact with this rather than that. So I am, as you said, I had a little bit of that. I don't know about that bigotry thing though. I don't think I'm bigoted. Neither am I racist per se, because, and I don't know, I hear Martin Luther King in my ear all the time, judge a person by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. You know, that's the first thing we see about a person. That's not the first thing I see about a person.
Bullshit. I mean,
no, it's that's true. I mean, I am
racist.
Man, look, I let people hang themselves, really. Like, I will give you enough rope. I will let you talk.
Wait, so now you're hanging niggas.
I'm hanging you.
Man.
So, see? But you know, I tell Dan all the time, Dan, he's a colorist.
See, and that's what I was going to actually jump into, because,
you know, he's not racist. He's colorist.
If you want to go back to your original premise, I guess, being racist, no. I'll still say yeah, just for the shock value, but no. Now, everyone has preferences. Anne likes to say I'm colorist. Like, I prefer brown skinned women. That's what we're talking about in reference to. So
he actually prefers Asians, but he just can't find a hot one. So,
you know what? You said it, not me. So, but no, everyone has their preference. I have a preference on body type. I have a preference on, no matter, I mean, we're all adults here. We've all seen and done enough stuff to know what we prefer. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's being colorist. That's just having a preference. I prefer brown skin women. That's just my preference. Colorist.
Wait, so why? What why do you prefer? Where did this preference come from? Why
experience. It's almost like asking someone why they like pizza. You can't really describe why you can't explain why you like pizza. I just like this shit.
No, you can't explain why. I can explain why I like pizza. What makes a lighter skinned woman better than a darker skinned woman?
I never said they were better. That's just my preference.
Everybody has preferences. I mean, you know, like you said, with shape, you know, some guys don't want a big girl. Some guys prefer a big girl. I mean, I don't think I could explain that if I was put in a situation. It's,
man, y'all need to think about that, man. Y'all need to think about that.
Think about why we have preferences.
That's the homework. That's
y'all ain't come on here doing all damn homework.
Come back with the answer, man.
So why do you prefer what you prefer?
I don't think I have a preference. I really don't.
Everyone has preferences.
Dude, for real. Because I have dated guys who are brown skin. I've dated guys who are light skin. I've dated guys who are white. I've dated guys who are Asian.
Once upon a time.
So have you ever been in an interracial relationship?
I have not.
Do you agree with interracial dating or relationships? Why or why not?
Back in the day when I was not as enlightened as I am now. I had a big problem with interracial dating.
I don't really have a preference. I like
fucking lying.
I ain't lying. I like
what about a guy shorter than you? Wait, what about a guy shorter than you?
I don't know if I've ever dated somebody shorter than
you. Would you? Do you prefer?
Would I?
Yeah. Would you look at a...
I would. I mean, look, let me tell you. If dude got money and he could take care of me the way that I need to be taken care of...
Wait, so a broke dude then?
Now, see, that might be an issue, but it's not a preference. It's a lifestyle. You know, I have to be maintained in the lifestyle to which I am accustomed.
You can't do that yourself?
And I expect you to contribute to that lifestyle.
So you prefer that he can do that?
Huh?
You prefer that he would be able to do that?
I would like for him to do that.
Sounds like a preference.
I would like for him to do that.
Sounds like prostitution to me, but
we had that conversation. You know what, Craig? That's a good question to ask. We've had that conversation. Like I said, ain't nothing in life free, bro. You paying for it some kind of way.
I disagree with that. You gotta pay.
All right, talk to me. Talk to me.
I mean, what are you saying? Like the whole dating process is paying? Maybe you just.
We had a conversation back in the day, and the way the conversation ran was somebody said, if I take a chick out to dinner in a movie, she got to give it up. Is what somebody said. You know,
that was his preference.
I was going to say I would prefer.
You know, it's like so in the conversation. We were talking about the illegalization of prostitution. And my comment was, you know, it's all because, and Dan will say that I say this all the time, we live in a patriarchal society. And men want to tell women what they can and cannot do with their body. So here it is. You marry somebody and you're a stay-at-home mom, right? Husband pays for the house, the car, the clothes, the food, right? And you, in turn, clean house. And at the end of the day, you're giving it up, right? So is he not paying for it?
No, you're doing that out of love for each other.
Oh, right. Really? So here's the thing, though. So we get married and I'm doing all of this and you're taking care of the kids and you're keeping the house and everything else. And when it comes to sex, I say no. Then what happens?
It's just, you know, by itself, I guess.
I have never seen, let me put this more tastefully, I guess. What do you tell a woman with two black eyes? that's just, once you're at that point and you're married, it's not paying for it. Once you're living together, married, she's taking care of the kids, she's cleaning, she's cooking, she's doing all that shit, you out working. That's almost an equal exchange.
Like, let's sort of barter.
Yeah. Well, no, you're not bartering, you're both contributing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So let's say you have a savings account, right? And you work and your partner works. Both of you, whatever you can. You know, it might not, you might put in $50, he might put in 20, because he a little short this month, because he got to spend money on taking care of your ass. So it doesn't necessarily have to be equal, but you're both contributing, and it's for the betterment of the household.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So
I don't think that's paying for it.
I mean, but you're still actually helping me out here, because yeah, you're doing something for me. And I'm doing something for you.
If you say so. So, yo, Craig, you got anything else you wanted to add here? Because, you know, we went from racism to prostitution.
You know, we often fall into these sidebars. It happens quite often.
Look, the show would not be right without the sidebar. I mean, that's a staple. of the sidebar of the show.
No doubt. So, yo, how's business going? Black business.
Everything was I switched from doing music videos to corporate video. That was the goal. And right before COVID hit, I was ready to rock and roll. You know what I mean?
Right.
In order for me to land business clients, I need a portfolio that shows videos, you know, of businesses that, you know, I've worked with. So,
right.
I couldn't really land anybody until I built that portfolio. So right before COVID, right before COVID hit, I had a bunch of videos lined up to shoot for free to build up my portfolio. And
right.
Of course, everything's gone to hell since then.
Right.
But I'm good. I'm still working my night job. So
damn. No doubt. So COVID definitely affected you as far as
everybody
slowing things down.
Yeah. When it comes to freelancers, all the freelancers I know are hurting. You know, I happen to have full-time employment, so I'm good.
Right.
Wife just now got unemployment, and she's a business owner too, you know, independent contractor, so to speak. But so that's helped out too. But you know, I'm feeling for all the just straight up, I work for myself, freelancers out there.
Oh, no doubt.
But some of them are having trouble getting, Paul's barber. He had been in business less than X amount of time, and right. he didn't qualify for the
fee.
Yeah. So
you had to be in business
2 years, I think.
Well, it's as of February 2020, you had to have. I'm trying to remember, as a sole proprietor, you had to be in business as of February 2020. And I don't remember reading anything about a 2 year requirement. You just had to have information showing your income. And we know as we try to tell the people on the show, get legitimized. We say, I mean, that is like a recurrent theme. And a lot of Black-owned businesses don't really do that. You know, they don't mm-hmm. have the separate business account. They don't keep good records. So in order to get this PPP loan, you had to have records.
Right.
And a lot of people didn't. So that's where a lot of people got shafted.
Where you got all, like, you got all your stuff in order, Craig, as far as business structure?
Well, I mean, I have more than the average person.
Right.
You know, I have the separate accounts, the LLC that Ann helped me set up. Record keeping, I feel like I should do a better job, but also feel like, hey, it's electronic. I can pull up all the transactions and everything.
Right.
Do I actually need receipts anymore?
Yo, I can tell you that when you got the IRS on your ass asking for a receipt for this, and yo, you sweating bullets looking for that shit, like going through emails and
yeah.
Yeah. Not that I've had to do that for anything.
Yeah.
But you know, I tell people all the time, it's as simple as, you know, some people might not have electronic anything, but it is as simple as getting a brown manila envelope, drop the receipt inside there. It's as simple as that.
That's a lot of paper, man.
I know it is. The crazy thing is, but you have that paper. And at the end of the day, you pick that paper up and you bring it into your accountant, your tax person, whatever, and they have that information.
Yeah, you're right.
But most people,
simple. I want to say, I love all y'all's episodes, but my favorite ones are the ones that deal with the business. And I can't remember the guy you have on the tax, or not.
Jayden Hollywood.
Hollywood. Jayden. Yeah. I love when he's on there too. Like, those are my favorite episodes.
Yeah, shout out to Jayden, man. He really came up from.
He is moving and shaking.
From the first time we met him and had him on the show to the last time. He got a lot accomplished, CPA, and yo, he's doing really well. But
his own firm, moving into bigger spaces.
Oh, he ain't messing with y'all now, right?
Nah, he got too big for us. He went Hollywood on us.
Like, who is this? Nah, I don't know.
Yeah, he got Becky. Becky is actually on his answering service. Because he needed someone to sound professional. And, you know, Becky, being Becky, I had someone tell me the other day on Twitter, they're like, yo, every time you reference Becky, I thought you was talking about a random white lady. I was like, well, either way, it still works.
That works. Right. That works. Out.
But yeah, y'all seem like y'all blowing up too. I'm hearing sponsorships and all that kind of stuff, commercials.
Man,
like,
that shit dried up too with the COVID. Yo, we watched our first year podcast in 2017. We were doing like 10 and 29 listens per week the first couple of episodes, and I'm like just questioning, like, damn, is this shit even worth it? And I have no clue how we got to where we are now, because we didn't do any paid promotion. We did do a lot of social networking on the social media sites. But I still have no clue how we got to where we were. But yeah, all the advertisements and shit dried up after this whole COVID thing hit. And it's like,
wow,
damn, ain't no one trying to advertise. And you would think now would be the time to advertise. It's like people sitting at home chilling, listening to their favorite podcast. But I also noticed that our numbers have been sliding. We're down about, from March until now, we're down about 10-15%. So people are still consuming it, they're just not doing it as expeditiously
much as it. Well, and it's because if you think about it, and well, not in spite of it all, because of it all, even though you want a little bit of mindless entertainment, there's a lot of worry. So people are like tuning in, trying to figure out, you know, what to do and where to go and whatever. So I think to myself, people are actually trying to figure out everyday life, you know, like, what's my next step? So
I also wonder what, like, when people listen, like when I listen to y'all, I'm in the car on the way or from work to or from work. And if a lot of people listen to podcasts, then a lot of traveling ain't being done. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah. Right? When I listen to podcasts, I'm either in the bathroom getting ready for work. I got the Bluetooth speaker playing, trying to catch up on what's going on. That's when I listen to my entertainment type of shit. Then as the day goes on, I'll pop in my ear pods at work and just listen as I'm doing whatever I'm doing. So when I was working from home, I noticed I wasn't listening to any podcasts because, yo, my routine just got totally disrupted to where it's like, I don't even want to. I would try to put one on and it would just be kind of droning in the background. And I'm like, I'm not even paying attention to this shit. So for me, it's definitely at work while I'm working on something. And I'm sure you know how it is in IT when you got people talking and shit, you're trying to concentrate. You're like, yo, shut the fuck up, man.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, the routine has been thrown off. I'm a very habitual person. Yeah, a creature of habit. And when that gets thrown off, everything is thrown off for me.
Right.
Everything. I mean, when I get up tomorrow, I have an idea of what I'm going to do. If somebody comes to visit or throws, or I start the day without an idea, I don't get anything done. Right. I spend a whole day sitting, what am I going to do? Because I had no plan, you know?
Right. The worst thing is when you get that phone call, yo, so-and-so's in the hospital. You're like, fuck, man. That just fucked my whole day. I'm saying, sometimes I have that conversation with myself, like, do I really want to, really, you know? All right. But no doubt, yo, thanks for coming on the show, Craig, and drop your social media. And a lot of people see me wearing the next level gear.
To the next level. I'm trying to get there.
Trying to get to the next level.
I'm trying to get to the
gear too, the merch. You can find me at nextlevelvisions.com, and all the links are there. I don't want to drop all the social links because the spelling's all weird. But you can catch my Twitter, my Instagram. Everything is at nextlevelvisions.com. I appreciate y'all having me on here. Always wanted to
coming.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I always wish that it was a call-in show. Maybe we'll get there one day. Because sometimes I came to the party a little late, so I had to go back and listen to episodes. I'm like, oh, I need to talk to Ann. That's some bull. They jumping on my cousin like that. We can't have that. That was 6 months ago.
No doubt. Yeah,
it's over.
Craig was heated about that. What was it? The custody joint.
I didn't get heated. I realize it varies big time state to state.
Yeah.
You know,
it does. But I can tell you what, a lot of people, I caught heat on that episode. I caught heat from a lot of daddies, man.
Nah, the abortion.
Oh, that was another one.
Yeah. We had a video clip out there. That shit had like thousands of views and people was going in on Ann because I want to say I might be paraphrasing here, but Ann said that if a mother is pregnant, she has no obligation to tell the father.
Ooh, yeah, I remember and, that.
Yo, women was heated with her, and I'm like just dumping gasoline, like yeah, fuck Ann. <man." laughs> That's fucked up. She said that.
But it's all good. I appreciate y'all having me on here, man. If I can hop on another time.
Oh, yeah. Once we get some normalcy back and get Ann back in the building, definitely. And get Becky back on the show. She's been MIA. Definitely do that. And we'll have a better topic, too. Because, racism, man. No one really wants to talk about racism. But we have to, believe it or not, for those of you who are not minorities and people of color. So this has been another episode of Black Law and Legalize. Per usual, we thank you for tuning in. Keep up with the show on Twitter, IG, YouTube at Black Law Podcast. And you can keep up with me on Twitter and IG at I Am Dan on Drugs.
And you can follow me at I Tell Legal Lies.
Peace.
Peace.